For years and years, heating has meant boilers, and boilers have meant breakdowns. Over here and over here. Anything but music to your ears. At Fisher Future Heat, we create state-of-the-art home heating systems that we fit, then you forget. With no annual servicing needed and a huge 10-year guarantee. In short, we engineer common sense. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric. For years and years, heating has meant boilers, and boilers have meant breakdowns. Over here and over here. Anything but music to your ears. At Fisher Future Heat, we create state-of-the-art home heating systems that we fit, then you forget. With no annual servicing needed and a huge 10-year guarantee. In short, we engineer common sense. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Welcome to the Nerd Party. This is episode 15. Today we are talking about, well, it's kind of an extension of what we talked about last week. Last week we talked about our favorite films of 2014 and our movies that we are looking forward to the most upcoming in 2015. So we're going to do the same thing, continuing with this New Year's theme, with TV shows. That's right, television shows. Matt and I actually watch television, not just movies all the time, as you might have guessed.
Yeah, this is part of Tristan's effort to not pigeonhole us as just a movie podcast.
It doesn't work if you say it out loud, dude.
It's pretty obvious. But yes, we watch TV, believe it or not.
It's true. I mean, when we started this show, we talked about how we wanted to not just be movies or not just be TV, but we wanted to be all things nerd. We wanted to be comic books. We wanted to be tech. We wanted to be geek stuff happening socially, you know? But for some reason, that kind of just fell to the wayside and went more towards our news segments or our opening segments. And then the movies took center stage. And I think the reason why is because you and I just love movies very dearly.
Yes, but today's going to be about TV shows. But in an effort to not lose the movie focus totally, we have a bit of an opening segment here. Because earlier this week... As the world probably knows, the second trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron came out during the college football championships. And, of course, I watched it about five or six times. Have you seen it yet, Tristan?
I have seen it, and I was actually, the moment I saw it, I actually texted you and said, new trailer. And I didn't have to say new Ultron trailer or new Avengers trailer. I just said new trailer with a link, because I knew you would know what I was talking about.
Yeah, you were about 5 minutes too late on that one. I had already seen it.
I figured I was going to be late to the party, that you would be clicking and clicking and clicking in the instant that it opened up.
No, I actually caught it. My dad was watching the game, so I heard Robert Downey Jr.'s voice, and I stopped everything and ran into the living room.
That's so funny. That's so you.
It's true, but anyway, you know. So the trailer came out. Lots of different reactions to it. Some mostly positive, some negative, with people complaining about how the CGI doesn't look right yet. And, you know, why is that still a complaint in this day and age? Don't people know how movies are made by now?
I don't think they do. I don't think people understand it. When we've talked about it before, I really don't think people understand it. And I think it's a way for them to sound educated, but they're actually showcasing their own ignorance. It's like this movie's coming out a long time from now, and they're still working on it. The last phase of producing a movie, you have pre-production, production, post-production. Pre-production is writing and figuring out all your sets and art and everything like that. Production is actually shooting. Post-production is editing and special effects. And that's what they're doing right now. And so it takes time to get it to the right texture, the right lighting. And when you do a trailer, you just get it out there into the best of your ability. So calm down, people.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point of a trailer is so that it looks like it's a preview of what it might look like, but it's as good as it's going to get at that point.
Right.
I mean, they're still working on it. And part of it, I think, is I never can pronounce this word right, but because Marvel is so on top now, and this is one of their biggest movies for the year, what's that German word? Is Schadenfreude or whatever it's called, where people want to see someone so big fail, you know?
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, that that. I think part of it is that. But moving on from that, you know, Tristan, you and I talked in the past about what is upcoming for Marvel in their Phase 3. And I think it's fair to say that one of their biggest projects, aside from the next Avengers two-parter, is this Civil War movie, which seems to be growing in scale from day to day from what I read from the comic sites. It pretty much, it's turning from a Captain America movie, which I still think it will be, but it's turning to, like, a movie that will affect many more people. Iron Man's in it. I think a few more Avengers are in it. They just confirmed Winter Soldier and Falcon will be in it. So
that's right.
A lot of people are going to be in it. And what we know of the story so far is that in Civil War, Captain America and Iron Man are going to be on opposite sides, with Iron Man supporting this sort of, from what I gather, a government initiative or registration act, so that the Avengers or anybody like them will have someone to answer to, so they're not working on their own.
Yeah, it's the superhuman registration act. You see that a lot in different iterations all throughout comic book eras and fandoms and things like that. And,
right.
Tony is all about registration and, like, making the Avengers initiative a part of a government agency, so that the government knows who these superheroes are, but the public doesn't. And Captain America's like, no, you know, like we should be, like, if we're a part of this government agency, then they can tell us who's evil and who's not and who to kill. And then we're just hired assassins, and governments can be corrupt.
Right. But from what I understand, was Kevin Feige, the director of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this is going to be less about secret identities and more of what you just said. Who do the Avengers and other people like that answer to?
Yeah, because right now it doesn't really make sense for them to focus on the secret identity part, because they didn't really hide it that much. Like, everybody knows who Steve Rogers is. You know, like Tony Stark, even though in the comic books, Tony Stark was always Tony Stark.
They could do it if they owned both X-Men and the Spider-Man, but they don't, so.
Yes. I think, like, having the mutants in there definitely helped with that, as well as Spider-Man was a big part of that, with revealing his identity in the Civil War storyline. And with that gone, I think it's smart. It's all pointing away from keeping the super secret stuff super secret.
Right.
So I think it makes sense.
But at the beginning of Civil War, I was thinking about this. At the beginning of Civil War, we're going to have our characters in radically different positions than they are now, because from what we've seen in the previous films, Iron Man is not a pro-government guy. He is a very much an independent. He wants to do things on his own. You know, in that first Avengers movie, he infiltrates the S.H.I.E.L.D. systems to find out what secret projects they're working on. He doesn't like big government things.
And let's not forget Iron Man 2, where the government told him to turn over his Iron Man suit, and of course he would say no, but the complete disrespect that he had for the court proceedings as well as the government was very well made known in Iron Man 2.
Okay, so believe it or not, because I'm a nerd and I have so much time on my hands, I spent the better part of the last hour trying to figure out how Age of Ultron could lead into Civil War and how this could all come about, because I think we're getting enough clues at this point where we can make some of these leaps. So without further ado, I'll try to make this as brief as possible. But so in addition to Iron Man being not a pro-government guy, at the end of the original Avengers, all these Avengers are seen as heroic figures. So they're celebrities. Everybody loves them. And we see them, you know, continue in the Phase 2 movies, like when Robert Redford says that Iron Man has to come to his niece's birthday party. You know, they're public figures. They're celebrities. And I think their reputation could have taken a little bit of a hit when the S.H.I.E.L.D. Records were released at the end of Winter Soldier, but I think they're still pretty much universally loved. And that's in contrast to something like the mutants in the X-Men universe, who are, you know, feared, reviled. We have to make registration acts and cures and sentinels to wipe them out. So in order for this government thing to come about in Civil War, something has got to happen in the between to take the Avengers from beloved figures to people who the citizens of the world think that need to be controlled. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying.
So I was thinking, what could be the key to the to getting their reputation sullied and to get Tony Stark on a pro-government side? I think that's where Age of Ultron is going to come in. Because we know that in Age of Ultron that Tony Stark and Bruce Banner are responsible for creating Ultron. And I think at the beginning, we're going to see Tony Stark trying to privatize world security through the Avengers now that S.H.I.E.L.D. is gone. But in order to do that, since there's only six of them, they're going to create Ultron, I think, as a supplement to try to help them maintain world order. Obviously, we see from this trailer that that's going to go all horribly wrong. Lots of mayhem and destruction. And at the end of the day, I think that all the fingers are going to point to Tony Stark and the Avengers as responsible for what happens to the world. I think it'll also fracture the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see in the certain parts of the trailer, like Thor trying to choke out Tony Stark for doing something. I also think it's possible that we saw, especially in the second trailer, like weird stuff happening, like with we're seeing Black Widow's backstory and people are starting to doubt themselves. I think that's going to be from Scarlet Witch, who I think is going to be helping Ultron in the beginning, because we saw that her together with him in the first trailer. But in any case, I think that the fallout from Age of Ultron will not only fracture the team, it'll damage their reputation, and Tony's going to feel personally responsible because he created Ultron in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think in order to avoid any more bloodshed, there might be like a post-credit scene where someone from the government will approach him about a registration act, and he will be more inclined to go along with it. Now, I'm still trying to figure out how Captain America is going to take the opposite side. Mm-hmm. I think that it'll, you know, people think it'll be because he values freedom and liberty, but I hope it stems from something more than just good old American patriotism, quote unquote. I hope what it is that he's still reeling from the events of Winter Soldier, with the last government agency assigned to help them was so corrupt that it's not a good idea to do this again.
I think that's definitely a possibility. I think that's it's very much key right there. We don't, with the broad strokes, we have no idea. I think you have a lot of great theories, and I think you have a lot of great direction. And at this point, you know, it's anybody's guess. But towards the end there, I think you definitely hit it on the head where Captain America is still reeling from, you know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. He's not going to trust any government agency. He's like, why would he? And he reluctantly joins this Avenger initiative because maybe he'll trust Tony Stark, because we see him with that patch on his arm. And but I really like what you said about how, you know, I don't think Ultron is going to end happy, and we're going to get that, whether it's at the very end or that post-credit sequence, it's going to end with the whole, I want to talk to you about, you know, a registration act, and Tony kind of lifts his eyebrow. I like that a lot. I think that's definitely a way that it could go.
And I think Joss Whedon has said that this is, you know, I still think we're going to get some comedy in this film because, you know, it is the Avengers and that's what we like them for. But uh-huh. I think Joss Whedon himself said this is not going to be a very happy film. And I he's been comparing it to Empire Strikes Back, of course. And I think that, yeah, like you said, I don't think this is going to end well for them. I don't know if they're going to die. Because
yeah.
We're continuing on, but I don't think the team is going to be intact by the time that this movie's over.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, that is Matt's guess on how Ultron's going to play out and how it's going to link up with Civil War. Please reach out to us, whether it's on Twitter or via email or on our Facebook group. You can go to the facebook.com/thenerdparty and you can comment there. You can also contact us at contact@thenerdparty.com, and you can find me on Twitter at @TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me at mhanson0207.
We'd love to hear your theories, and we'd love to hear what you think's going to happen. All right, well, we spent a while on that. Let's go ahead and get into the topic of the show, and that is TV shows. Now, I'd love the format that we did last time, where we went 5 down to 1. And I'd love to hear what your top 5 favorite TV shows of 2014 were, starting with number 5.
Well, before we recorded the show, I said number 5 was my guilty pleasure. I actually changed it so that I had a separate guilty pleasure. I thought of one more show that I do watch, because, as you know, Tristan, network TV and cable TV isn't the only source for TV shows anymore. We now have made for Netflix and made for other streaming content TV shows that I still think count as television shows, since they have quote-unquote episodes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So my number five is a show that you don't particularly like, but the rest of the world, including me, does, and that's Orange is the New Black. Season two came out last summer with and continued the story. I have to say, I know you tried the first couple episodes and it wasn't your cup of tea. It's a different kind of show to get into. But what I will say is that I think that the Netflix format of distribution really helps this show, because once you can see where the show, where the characters and the show leads to, the character development in it is really interesting, and the character personalities are big. And that's kind of what I like. Everyone is kind of, no one's boring in that show to me. So everybody kind of has a dynamic personality. Kate Mulgrew is fantastic. You know, I have to say that as a Star Trek fan.
Well, she was definitely my favorite part. And just as a little bit of a fan correction, I didn't just watch the first couple of episodes. I watched the first season.
Okay. Well, again, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. I get that. This is all subjective. But what I will say is, like I said, I think the characters are interesting. I think they have big personalities. I think the second season is much better than the first. I'll just throw that out there. I think that the show is definitely aiming, is improving as it goes along, as most TV shows do. And the story, it left off at a very interesting place, sort of a cliffhanger. And for the sake of not spoiling anybody, I won't say where it left off. But like I said, big characters, big personality, but personal stories, and I really like that. So that's my number five.
This always kind of makes me laugh, because I tried it, I didn't like it, and I was like, okay, I didn't like it. And just the fact that I told people that I didn't like it, they acted like I slapped their mother. It's insane. Like, I never said it was a horrible show. I never said it was horribly acted. I didn't say it was a piece of crap. I just said, oh yeah, I didn't really connect with it. And people are like, what, are you crazy? Are you stupid? This is amazing. Like people, everybody that I've talked to, every single person that I've talked to online or in person, except for in my family, they have tried to make me feel like something is wrong with me because I don't like this show.
Well, we've already established that you dislike good things.
No, but I love great things. So we have it on record. I watched the first season, didn't like it, love Kate Mulgrew. Not just because she's Kate Mulgrew, but just because Red's a fantastic character.
At least you can say that I didn't ridicule you. But like I said, this is a divisive show. It's kind of comedy. It's not going to be for everybody.
Yes, and that's the thing, is that it isn't for everybody. And so just relax, people who are listening, and let other people not like what they don't like. Well, my number five is also my biggest surprise of 2014. And this the season didn't start in 2014, but it finished in 2014, and that's the first season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. This show, I was really surprised at this, because I do like sitcoms. I mean, like, I either have heavy drama and stupid sitcoms. Like, I don't have anything in between. And with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I just kind of gave it a shot. I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And I was blown away right off the bat. I was like, this is really funny. This has great representation. It has multiple African Americans. It has a person from of Cuban descent, of Hispanic descent, of Italian descent. It has a homosexual captain. And that's the thing, is like, it's not like, the Andre Brower, who is an amazing actor who plays the captain, who is a homosexual. They don't play it for yucks. It doesn't. Right. It's not played for laughs. And it's not like, it's not a storyline of him being, like, in the opening episode, they introduced he was gay, and that was part of the storyline. But then ever from that, it was just, oh, he's gay. It's just like being straight. You know, it's not like, it doesn't need to be a storyline. Like, him talking about his husband, you don't have to remind everybody, oh yeah, he's gay, and so it's a part of the plot point. No, he's talking about his husband because that's what people do. We talk about our spouses and our significant others. And like, there's no, like, the stereotypes are very, very low in this show. They still exist. There's definitely some ageist stereotypes in it, whereas the older people are kind of useless. But other than that, for the racial and gender stereotypes are kind of out the window. And
I would argue, for a sitcom situation, you have to play on some stereotypes, because that's what makes it funny.
Yes. Like, with any sitcom, you have to play on stereotypes. I'm glad you brought that up. But this one downplays it, and it's definitely character-based comedy and not just stereotype-based comedy. And it's just, it's well-written, and it's well-acted, and it's fun. It's light, it's fluffy, but it's not stupid. And that's what I really like about it.
I might have to check that out. Now, this is the Andy Samberg show, right?
This is the Andy Samberg show. And the thing is, though, is that Andy Samberg is not everybody's cup of tea. So I completely understand, like, because his type of humor is specific to him. And if you don't like it, you know, like, it's if you don't like him, you probably aren't going to like this show. All right.
I have no strong feelings either way, but I'll check it out for sure.
And I think everybody should. You should just give it a shot. Matt, you're number four.
My number four. It's my whole list is probably comprised of shows that you don't like, but that's okay. We have different viewpoints on this show. And my number four is a show that I talked about before that you said you couldn't get into, but I really loved, especially leading up to this summer's film, and that is The Blacklist with James Spader.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is a really interesting show because I was not familiar with a lot of James Spader's work prior to his announcement in Age of Ultron, and then I thought I should probably familiarize myself with him. I knew of him and I seen him, like I said, but the only real exposure I had to him was the nerdy guy in Stargate. But I wanted to see him play a villain. And I know he has a big personality. I know he has an arrogant personality from some of his not in real life, but from his roles that he played back in like the 80s and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So but I wanted to see him play a villainous type or a bad guy before Age of Ultron came out, and I gotta say he really does carry the show. The rest of the characters are good too, but he's the star, no doubt, and I just love seeing him. He does this self-confidence thing really well. I don't know if that stems from him personally or not, but I saw this show and I saw the beginning of Boston Legal like you told me to, Tristan, and I started to love that show too. But he just does the self-confident, arrogant thing so well, and it's such a— normally, stuff like that wouldn't be a joy to watch, but he makes it so interesting, and I love seeing him play that sort of smug asshole, you know what I mean? He's just so fantastic, and it that alone makes it, you know, fun to watch, aside from the serialized storyline, which is, you know, the norm these days, but something that I really appreciate. So if you're into crime procedurals and if you're a fan of James Spader, at least check it out. It might not be for you, but he makes it certainly dynamic to watch.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Like, he is definitely a dynamic presence. He's a dynamic actor. And he's pretty much the only reason why I gave it a shot, because I just don't particularly like that format. I don't like crime shows. I don't. And I don't know. Like, I lasted about four episodes, and I was just like, you know what? I just can't do it. It's just too much like CSI to me. It's too much like all those other cop procedurals that are on the air right now. But the thing is that, like, if I was to stay on, it would have been for the reasons that you stated.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, you have to like the format of the shows that we're recommending to you. Let's just put that up front, because I think a lot of them, you know, they're genre TV. So, you know, if you don't like the genre, maybe not check them out. But if you do, give it a shot.
Now, my number four is, and I don't care what people say, and I don't care if they make fun of me, it's a reality TV show, and it's the only reality TV show that I watch, and it's the only reality TV show that I think is any good that's not based on some sort of competition, because, like, I don't want to, like, piss off the people on Face Off, you know, because I know that a lot of people like that, and it's a genre, it's a sci-fi thing. But the show that I really like is The Little Couple, and I don't know if you know anything about that.
No,
you know,
I've never heard of it.
You never heard of it? Okay, see, that's the thing. It's like, it's on TLC, and it's a show that follows a little couple. And it's I think they're on season seven, I think, season six or seven, season seven. And it's...
When you say little couple, you mean like little people?
Yes, they're little people. It's two little people, and they have forms of dwarfism, and it's a man named Bill and a woman named Jen, and... it's just a reality show where they follow them around and they show their life, and it sounds really boring, but the thing is it gives you a glimpse of their world, about the issues that they have to deal with, how they deal with life, how they accommodate themselves to be in an average size world, but the thing is, though, is that it is so positive that it's so nice to see, because it's not a Honey Boo Boo, it's not, you know, like The Housewives of Georgia or whatever.
It's not the other stuff that you find on TLC. Have you seen this promo for this My Husband's Not Gay show?
Oh my gosh, no, I have not seen that. I don't even want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it, because it's all that stuff is dreck. And The Little Couple is not. I just keep using the word positive. It's so positive because they truly love each other. They truly want what's best for each other. And when they argue in front of each other, it's cute. And we go through this whole storyline of how they were trying to have children and then trying to get surrogacy to work. They couldn't get surrogacy to work. And then they adopted a child in China, and then they adopted a child in India. And so now it's the two of them with two adopted kids, and they also have a form of dwarfism. Mm-hmm. And it's adorable, it's cute, and it makes you feel good watching that piece of television, because you don't walk away devoid like, oh wow, those people have a lot of issues, or oh, like, oh, I feel a lot better about myself because those are freaks and I'm not.
So it's a positive reality show.
It's the most positive reality TV show I've ever seen, and Bill and Jen are very interesting people, and they are successful at what they do, and it's just, in this world of cynicism and sarcastic nature, they are a beacon of positivity. And I'll stop using that word and just go ahead and
move on. No, I think it can't be understated, because when you say reality TV to me, I think of all those people on those competition shows or whatever that are so, you know, dumb and peevish and selfish and stupid and you know, are out to get one another. And I have no interest in that, but I'm glad that there is some sort of positivity associated with reality TV.
Yeah, and it's the only one that I've been able to witness, and it used to be on Netflix. Like seasons 4 through 6 were on Netflix, or 3 through 6 were on Netflix, and they took it off, and so I was like, well, this just can't stand, and so I splurged and bought as many seasons as I could on iTunes.
Okay, sounds good. I might check that out. You may have convinced me.
Yeah, I think you should. Well, how about we move into number 3, because we're going on a little long, so how about you give me your number 3?
My number 3. Okay, so I'll preface my number 3 and later my number 1 choices by saying that, as you guys all know, if you've listened to the show before, I'm a fan of the horror genre. If this isn't your genre, this is not recommended for you. But I will say that with a lot of the recent horror movies coming out not being very good, in my opinion, I think some of the best horror and the best suspense you're going to find on television. And that's certainly true with my number 3 choice, which is Bates Motel, which is the prequel series to Psycho that's on A&E. And I was very, very, not cynical, but like uneasy about this show coming out, because, you know, Psycho is a property that I think is classic, as many people mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. I think that when people try to mess with it, you get 1998 Psycho remake. So, you know, I was wondering how much of the, how can you make a TV show out of the events that happened before Psycho? And the answer is that you get a really good cast to play with. You have Vera Farmiga as Mrs. Bates, who is an actress that I loved and have loved for years.
Me too.
And she kills it in this role. And you get Freddie Highmore, who, if you don't know, was the little kid from the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory remake as Charlie. He was also in, what was it? Was it Finding Neverland?
Finding Neverland. Yeah, it was Finding Neverland.
He's a British actor, but the way he's made up in this show, he looks like a young version of Anthony Perkins. It was fantastic. And he does the accent and the stuttering and the speech to a T. It's almost like I'm watching Anthony Perkins, which is a real testament to his acting. And you make the show kind of like Psycho meets Twin Peaks, in the fact that they live in this town, and this town's very odd. And things happen around this town that can, you know, there's death, there's murder, there's corruption. And alongside all of that, you're getting the Psycho pre-story. And especially in this last, in season 2, which aired in 2014, which is why I'm counting it, mm-hmm. You start to see how Norman is starting to hear his mother talk to him when she's not there.
Oh, that's cool.
And you're getting, like, they drop little hints, like the promo for this third season that's coming out this year showed Norman in the parlor room of the hotel uncovering the picture and seeing the eye hole into the first cabin for the first time and watching somebody take a shower. So they're starting to tease more and more of that Psycho imagery into the show, and they're doing a really good job. It's very well acted, and it's suspenseful. And I didn't think a Psycho series would work, but if you're a fan and you like that sort of thing, it does. It's really good.
I watched the pilot of this episode of the show, and I was so turned off from the rape scene that I couldn't do it anymore. I was like, I watched this in good faith, and I felt like the producers tricked me into watching Vera Farmiga get raped, and I was so angry that I couldn't continue.
I mean, it's going to have some challenging imagery. Like I said, the best horror is now on TV, and some of it is graphic, and I will say nothing like that it really happens again. There is murder, and there is some intense things. But, you know, what I can tell you is that rape scene wasn't just put in there for the sake of putting it in there. I mean, rape is a hard thing to watch, but it's even more hard when it's pretty much useless or it doesn't accomplish anything. It spurns a whole storyline that develops throughout the rest of the first season and continues on, you know, affects the events of the second season. It puts things in motion, which, you know, I'm not saying it's worth it, mm-hmm. but what I'm saying is that it's not there just to be shocking, which I think is a bigger crime. It's something like, you know, when you compare it to something like, to use a sci-fi example, when you compare it to Troy and Nemesis, it's not that blatant. You know what I mean? It's useful. It accomplishes something.
Okay. It's okay. Well, I can't argue with you because I haven't seen it, but that's just my feelings on it. Like, I'm not saying you're wrong about the show. I'm not saying that, you know, like it's a horrible show. I'm just saying that it was such a slap in the face to me that I was just like, I would be hard pressed to try it again, but because you like it so much, I might give it another shot. Well, one show that's number three on my list that I'm not going to spend too much time talking about is True Detective.
Oh, I heard nothing but good things about this show. I still want to see it.
This is, like, obviously there's good things on it because it's number three on my list, and everybody became obsessed with this really fast, and I feel like Hollywood became obsessed with this much more than the world did, and the reason why I say this is because everyone wanted to be a part of that show. Like, having Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey involved with this show was a huge step in the right, like, huge step in something that started over 10 years ago. And with movie stars coming into television and, you know, kind of changing the dynamic where it wasn't a social faux pas to be a movie actor in a TV show. It was okay if you did a guest appearance, but to be in a TV show or like be a lead, then you're like, oh, well, you know, like your career is hit, you know, it's your career is definitely on the downfall. That's not the case anymore. And it's been that way for over the past decade or so, even longer. And with True Detective, there are things I like and things I don't like. And the things I like far exceed the things I don't. But I was happy of the format because it was an 8-episode format. And it's, like 10 years ago, I never would have thought I was saying this, because when TV shows started coming out with half seasons, like 13 episodes, I was the first one screaming, they're robbing us of episodes, how dare they? And then I realized that it just means more money, more time spent, more production value.
Less filler.
In those 13
episodes.
That's what I find.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing with True Detective, is that there's not too much filler in this. And I love, it has this true crime feeling to it. It feels like it could have happened and that it really did happen. And it feels like you're watching the best produced A&E special that you've ever seen in a good way. And I think that's why everyone attached to it. And the performance is phenomenal. Like, I think the reason why it's so negative is because the lead characters do some really horrible things. Like, they're not good people. And so it can kind of be hard to watch at times, because you don't love the characters, but the thing is, the story is so solid. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because True Detective has been talked about so much recently, but it should be interesting to see the future.
See, I think that's what makes things like that interesting, though. Unlikable characters with a good story and seeing how that affects them. That's real fascinating television to me, actually. So I definitely want to check that out. You're not alone in that.
You should take the time, absolutely.
Now, speaking of filler, I feel like that was a problem for the next show I'm going to mention as my number two. And so I've kind of split my number two between my disappointment and my number two top five. So for my number two top five, I'm saying the second half of the first season and so far all of the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is, you know, as you know, I'm a Marvel fan. So, of course, when they're doing a Marvel Cinematic Universe show. Yeah.
This is news to me.
Shut up. So, of course, when they're doing a Marvel Cinematic Universe show, I'm the one that's going to watch it. And so I started... I've already spoiled my disappointment. The first half of season one, I liked, but it also felt like filler. Like, a lot of it was just kind of like supplementary material to what's going on in the cinematic universe. And I felt like, you know, it was kind of a slave to the movies because you can't make any big changes on the TV show because not everybody's watching the TV show. They're going to have to come from the movies. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, what are you going to do with this TV show? You know, it kind of felt counterintuitive. But then... I think the problem was is that they were restrained from doing anything because when they came out, it was the fall of 2013, and Captain America: The Winter Soldier was coming out in April of 2014, and as you know, that has the destruction of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it changes everything. And it really, once that happened, the show got great because when S.H.I.E.L.D. was gone, like everybody started coming out of the woodwork. They're now fighting Hydra. They're fighting double agents. People you thought were good on the team turned out to be Hydra double people. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more intrigue now. I feel like the show has its direction, which I kind of feel people are getting impatient with, because if we think back to some of the shows that you and I grew up with, Tristan, I'm thinking a lot of the Star Treks in particular. Mm-hmm. A lot of them didn't find their direction until seasons two or three, or sometimes even four.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's really unfortunate that a show has to be amazing. It has to be busting out the gate by the pilot episode. Otherwise, it's in serious trouble. I think that any TV show needs its first season to find its footing. And that's why I always say, even if I'm not thrilled with the first season of a show, I will give the show its first season, because you need a season to make mistakes.
Well, I know that you and I have talked about this before off air, and I agree with you that I think you need to give a TV show time, but I feel like this is a symptom of a much larger thing. In the 80s, in the 90s, you didn't have anywhere near as many choices as you do now.
And we didn't have methods of instant gratification like Netflix or other stuff like that.
Exactly. And so in order to cut through the noise, in order to stand out amongst literally hundreds of shows instead of dozens, you have to be the best of the best. And I feel like that's definitely the reason why, but there has to be some sort of middle ground that
we haven't found it yet, unfortunately. But what I will say is that in the second half of its first season, and so far all of its second, which all aired in 2014, it's gotten its direction. It knows what it is. It's a spy thriller show, very much in the same vein of The Winter Soldier. Characters that I thought weren't going anywhere really turned out to have a great story. They're interesting and dynamic. They introduced some new characters from the comic books during this second season. And I think the cast is working extremely well. So if you're someone who was turned off, and I know a lot of people were during that first season because they felt that it was not going anywhere, I would suggest the first season is now streaming on Netflix. And, I forget what the name of the episode is, but I think it's the episode that immediately follows Winter Soldier. That's where you need to start. I don't think you need to know much before then, because they recap it for you at the beginning.
Oh, cool.
But once you get the episode where the events post-Winter Soldier start, it gets much better.
Hey, I'm all on board for that. Like, I'd be willing to try it out then. Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, because I tried it. I didn't like it. But with that recommendation, absolutely. All right, well, my number two is, this should be no surprise to a lot of people, is The Walking Dead. And I really like The Walking Dead. I've been a fan since episode one. I've often had a love-hate relationship with Walking Dead. And where it's been, like, and you were talking about filler earlier on, like, Walking Dead can definitely be a victim of its own filler. But I think the reason why it's made its way all the way up to my number two list is because when it knocks it out of the park, it knocks it out of the city. I mean, when it is good, it is amazing. But when it's bad, it's pretty boring. And it's just, I feel like it's definitely found its footing. Like, from season one was only about six episodes. Season two was a very boring season. Season three, I was like, wow, this is really picking up steam. This is really cool. Like, this could be my favorite season. And season four, like, a lot of people's favorite season has been season four, or was season four, but it was one of those, it was definitely a victim of what I just talked to you about. It's just like amazing moments, amazing setting, but some pretty boring filler in between. And with season five, it's, which is what it's on currently right now. It's like the season opener was one of the best hours of television I've seen in a very, very long time, a very long time. And I'm not saying that lightly, because the end of season four, which was in 2014, was one of the best episodes of television that I've seen in a very, very long time. So season four ended strong and season five began strong, but there was a storyline that I was definitely bored with in season five, but it still had those great moments. And so, like, I know it, I'm not giving a reigning endorsement of Walking Dead, and I feel like not a lot of people can, because I feel like a lot of people feel the way I do, is that they love it, but they also hate it. But it's so amazing in those parts that it's enough to carry you on. And I think that's why it's number two on my list.
Well, interesting, because, yeah, I've heard the same thing with Walking Dead. When it's good, it's great. When it's bad, it's really bad.
Yeah.
But they must be doing something right if they're coming up on season five.
Yeah, they're on season five right now. We're at the mid-season premiere coming up soon. And I'm so excited about this, too, because it's getting a spinoff.
Oh, it is. I didn't hear that.
It's getting a spinoff. It's going to be set in Los Angeles, and it's going to begin when the virus first took hold, which we didn't see during the show.
Well, that'll be cool.
We got, like, in the original Walking Dead, we were thrust into it out of nowhere.
Is the new show going to be the downfall of society?
I think so. I think that's what they're playing at. I think it's going to be the downfall of society and then walk us into another Walking Dead type show where, because like in The Walking Dead, it's all about the survivors. It's all about this one group making it from place to place, trying to survive, finding food, finding shelter. And so I think that they're going to start this spinoff with the fall of society and then turn into one of those shows, which I am absolutely excited about. But I'm going to geek out on my wife here a little bit. My wife had such an amazing idea, and this is never going to happen, obviously, because of how it was. But she wanted, and this was even before True Detective came out, she wanted The Walking Dead to be an anthology show. She wanted the spinoff to be an anthology show, where for one season, we follow one group of survivors in a different geographical location.
That's a really good idea.
Isn't that such a great idea? Because like season one would be like the fall of civilization in Washington, D.C., and we see how some government officials reacted. And in like season two, we have an island atmosphere where for an entire season, like they're on a tropical island or they're on some sort of...
And, you know, and with stuff like that, I mean, even if you're doing different cast season, you can have the events of one season affect the cast of another season.
Absolutely. And I just think like she plotted it out, and she had multiple ideas for multiple seasons. I was just like, this is such a good idea. Like, people need to hear this.
Get your wife to Hollywood.
I need to. She's brilliant, and she comes up with so many fantastic ideas. And like, I could just sit in a room and just try, like, think of something cool. Think of something cool. And she just has these pop in her head. She just it's like as she's just walking around.
Imagine like she becomes some writing executive over in Hollywood, and you're her plus one at events all the time.
Oh, I would love that. I would freaking love that. Absolutely. She does all the hard work and I just get to go to the party. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I could say, what's your number one, Matt? What's your number
okay, one? Okay, number one. Again, horror show. Don't watch it, because this one's actually intense. If you do not like horror, if you do not like psychological thrillers, if you don't like sort of that sort of intimidation, this is not for you. But I can honestly say it's one of the best shows that I've seen on television in the last 5 years. And I didn't think it was going to work, was Hannibal.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
What? I don't know what you thought I was going to say, but we'll move on from that. Hannibal, because how do you do a story that spins off of Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs, and how do you put it on NBC? To me, that sounds like an HBO or a Showtime show, because then you could do really intense visual things and get away with it because it's not network television. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, and I know I'm watching some of the uncut versions on my DVDs, but I watched some of the episodes live on NBC. I gotta say, they really do push the boundaries, and I'm surprised they go as far as they do. And it's still legal for them to show, because it is intense and it is fantastic horror suspense. And again, I think a lot of these horror suspense shows rests on the cast, and something as iconic as Hannibal Lecter, I did not think could be done by someone who wasn't Anthony Hopkins, because that image is so burned into our psyches and our memories from those films that I just didn't think it would be possible. But man, they got Mads Mikkelsen, who, as you know, was Lashif in mm-hmm. Casino Royale, to play Hannibal Lecter, and he nails it. He's so good. He plays a different kind of Hannibal Lecter because he's not captured. You know, he's the suave Hannibal Lecter pre his imprisonment.
Right, who we got to see a little bit at the beginning of Red Dragon, the
right,
movie.
Right, exactly. He's that kind of person, but he does it so well, and he's so intimidating, and he plays it a little bit like Lashif. But he's understated, but that is his strength. He doesn't overdo it. There's a quiet madness to him, and you see him psychologically manipulate the Will Graham character, who, if you don't remember, that's the Edward Norton character from mm-hmm. from Red Dragon, played by Hugh Dancy, who's what's her name, Claire Danes' husband, and he's great. They make his character more of an autistic. Not autistic, but he's got issues, and it's issues that Hannibal throughout the series manipulates and gets him into trouble with, so that not to spoil too much, but there's this running storyline of people dropping dead and finding organs missing, and we know, of course, that this is Hannibal killing them and eating them. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to help the police with their psychological profiles for other criminals that they're finding that week. At the same time, you have this running storyline of him manipulating Will so that he won't be captured. And it's so fantastic. But like I said, some of the imagery and some of the stuff they do is intense. So if you do not like being scared, if you don't like being... Because I'm pretty jaded myself. I've seen a lot of horror. And this got to me. It was really good. So stay away if it's not your thing. But if it is your thing, if you love the Hannibal movies, check it out. It's worth it. Really is.
My wife and I tried this show, and what happened was, over a weekend we had a lecture marathon where we watched Silence of the Lambs and then Hannibal and then Red Dragon, and then we're like, okay, well, what do we do now, because we didn't have access to Manhunter. We're like, okay, well, let's try Hannibal, you know, like let's try that. I mean, like, let's continue on with this. And so we watched it, and we're like, okay, yeah, this is pretty enjoyable. And then we kept watching, and I think we watched about 6 episodes, and we never got back to it. And normally what that means, like, if my wife and I aren't constantly talking about a show after we watch it, or we don't, like, look at each other and go, like, oh, well, let's watch the show, you know, like it's time to start that show again, then it usually means that it didn't really catch us. Like, there was nothing wrong with the show, in my opinion. Like, I didn't think it was bad at all. It just, I don't know, it just didn't connect with me. And it wasn't the horror, it was, I don't know what it was. There was just a je ne sais quoi that I couldn't wrap my finger around. The only negative thing that I can say about it is that 80% of the time I want to turn on the subtitles because of Mads Mikkelsen's accent.
Yeah, well, that's something he really can't help. But he does it. What I would argue about him is he does a good portrayal. And like I said, it's not for everybody. It might not capture your attention. That's fine, because, like mm-hmm. I said, that those movies are so burned into our cultural psyche that, you know, you may not gravitate toward anything else. All I can tell you is that I got the second season over Christmas, and I burned through all 13 episodes in a weekend. I mean, it really got suspenseful. It's great. You know, they bring in character actors, which I like. I mean, in this, I don't know if you got to, I imagine you didn't, because I don't think she was in the first 6 episodes, but you see Gillian Anderson from The X-Files come in to play Hannibal's psychotherapist, and she ends up playing a pivotal role. She's now a permanent cast member in season 3 upcoming, so.
I do love Gillian Anderson. Well, and I also love Eddie Izzard, and I heard that he was on the show too.
Oh, he was great, and I didn't, you know, I totally forgot about him, and he plays an excellent psychopath, which you wouldn't think, but he was great. He was fantastic.
Well, let's go on to my number one. And my number one, if you know anything about me, should not be a surprise to any of the listeners. And that is House of Cards.
Of course. David Fincher.
I know. I am a shameless Fincher lover. I love everything that he touches. And House of Cards is executive produced by him. And it was the first two episodes of season one were directed by him. So he set the tone and the visual style of the show. And I'm so thankful for that. And season two came out last year in 2014. And season two, I didn't think that they could top season one, because season one, House of Cards had the strongest first season out of any show that I've ever seen, except for maybe Firefly. And it was filled with everything that it was aesthetically pleasing. The performances were out of this world, and they deserved the Emmys that they got, and they deserved more. And I mean, it was one of the most cinematic shows that I've ever seen. And it just, I love the political intrigue. I love the style of it. And my wife and I have rewatched it. I'm embarrassed to say how many times we've rewatched the season. I mean, it's past five.
As many times as I've watched Marvel trailers.
Yeah, seriously, like when we're thinking about it, we're like, when we don't know what to watch, we're like, well, let's watch House of Cards. And so we do. And if we start it, we have to finish it. And we've done that with season two. I'm so hardcore that I pay for Netflix and we've bought the Blu-rays. Okay? Like, that is how much I'm in love with the show, and my wife is in love with the show. And season two was even better than season one. Like, I had to go back and forth at first, and I was just like, it's just like, it had so many great moments, so many great characters. There was no weak actors. There's no weak link in House of Cards, and I think that's why I love it so much, is because, that's not true. That's not true completely, because there is one storyline that gives me a really big eye roll, but I fast forward it, so... But it's just...
Let's pretend that David Fincher didn't have anything to do with that. Sweep under the rug.
We'll pretend. We'll just pretend for you and I. But I'm a huge Kevin Spacey fan.
Yeah.
I have two framed pieces of art that are based on his image that are hanging on my walls of Kevin Spacey. And that's not an exaggeration. And it's... I would watch anything with him in it. And... the reason why I'm not giving any details is because it would give things away. Like, this is a show that shopped around to the major networks, to CBS, to Fox, to NBC, to ABC. It shopped around everywhere and then started going to cable. And they didn't want to do a pilot. They did not want to do a pilot because of how pilots are structured. And so Netflix was the first and only people to say, yeah, sure, go for it. Make your season. You don't have to make a pilot for us. Just do it. We trust Venture. We trust Kevin Spacey. And so they did it, and it was phenomenal, and it is exactly where it needs to be. And sure, there is a few things that I could have done without. There's a few, there's nudity in there. There's sexuality in there that I don't really need to see. But it's fine. You can get past it if you need to.
He's such a Puritan.
I was born and raised in a Protestant household in the Midwest. Of course I'm going to have that. But I mean, that's the thing.
Nudity. Now I'm paying attention.
See, exactly. And that's the thing. And if that's your thing, hey, it has some of that in there. And I think the thing that really that's really special about the show is the dynamic between the husband and wife, between Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright. That is what makes a show, is their interaction and their marriage. And that is my top five list. And we've gone on for quite some time.
I know. I would just say though that to finalize your point, I think that Netflix works well for stuff like this, and for stuff like Orange is the New Black, only because, stuff that would seem like filler, if you got it from week to week, you can see all of it at one time, and you can see how a story unfolds, and I think that's so beneficial to a lot of people, so I'm not surprised that it's a good show, and it's coming back for season three, right?
Yeah, season three is coming out in February, so it's next month, and I have watched and analyzed the season three trailer just like how you watched and analyzed the Ultron trailer.
I'm not going to contact you that whole weekend when it comes out.
Please don't, because I might actually take off work on that Friday just because it's going to be released on a Friday. But before we go, we need to talk about our biggest disappointment and our biggest surprise.
Well, I already kind of teased mine. It was the first half of first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So what's your biggest disappointment there?
My biggest disappointment was Parks and Recreation. As I talked about earlier, I like high drama, but But when I go with my sitcoms, I could, you know, like I like sitcoms and I like high drama. I don't like anything in between. Parks and Recreation, I started with from the beginning. It was really funny, really great. The characters were really cool and individual. But they just, for like season four and season five, they just, they elevated their opportunities and then dashed them right away. Like they were going and going. You're like, oh my God, they're going to take a right turn. And that's totally the right thing to do. And then they take a left turn and then it's crappy. And I know some people might say, oh, well, they're not doing what you expect. No, they're doing poorly is what they're doing. And I'm like, this season is their last season. And
Then maybe if that's the way you feel, maybe it's they're going out at the right time. Then they're not overstaying their welcome.
I think you're absolutely right. And about them going out, I think they should have ended a while ago. I think they should have, I think it should have been a five season thing where they're like, okay, we're going to stop at five seasons, but I'm making it sound like Breaking Bad where they're like, okay, this is the number of seasons you're getting. But like, I know with a sitcom, you have to, your goal is to go as long as possible.
How many seasons now?
Just started their season seven, which is their last season.
Okay, seven seasons. I mean, that's a good run. That's a good run.
I know it is a good run, but the thing is, if every season was good.
Right.
You know, then I would agree with you, but
no, I get it, but just be grateful it's not like a Friends thing where it's going to like season 11. You know what I mean? Like seven seasons, that's a nice, well-rounded run.
You're right. It's not like Bones that's going on its 21st season or something like that. And my biggest surprise was my number five was Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like I didn't expect to see that coming.
Right.
So Matt, what was your upcoming 2015? Like, what are you interested in seeing this year?
Well, I gotta say, I don't know too much about what's coming out that's new. My favorite things to see in this season are gonna be the continuations of shows that I really like. I want to see where Bates Motel goes as we get closer to what I imagine is they're gonna end with Psycho, mm-hmm. and I would love to see that enacted or reenacted by those actors. And I definitely like Hannibal season two ends on a massive cliffhanger, and I definitely want to see where that goes, and that's coming I think during the summer. Okay. So
I think that was confirmed that it is coming during the summer. Well, mine is like I have House of Cards season three, of course, that we talked about. True Detective season two, I'm interested in seeing where they're gonna go because the casting is pretty unique, but I won't go into that right now. Bob's Burgers is a show that I latched onto. And I was really surprised by that. Like, I consumed that show. Like, my wife and I just watched all of it. It's really funny. It's really cute. The kids are adorable. It's just, I like animation, and I just thought it was really cool. And I'm interested to see where the season's going to go. Mad Men's final season is this year.
That's right. That is this year.
And I'm a big Mad Men fan. I have all the seasons. I didn't really like the first part of this season, but I'm hoping that the latter half, because they don't have to draw anything out, that it'll really hit it home. And then we have the Sherlock Christmas special that's coming out this year of 2015. And I like Sherlock. It's a lot of hit or miss for me, but I'm really interested about the Christmas special because it's going to be Sherlock and Watson, but it's going to be them during the time that Sherlock was actually written. Arthur Conan Doyle novels. Yeah, it's going to be the original setting of Sherlock, but just with those actors. And I think that's a really cool thing to do and take it out of its own continuity and just do something fun. And so I'm interested in seeing that. All right, well, that was our episode. Thank you so much for listening. We'd love to hear your list. And we talked about it earlier on about how you can contact us, but we'll say it again. You can find me on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me at mhansno207, and you can find both of us at our Facebook and Tumblr pages.
Our website is thenerdparty.com, and our Tumblr is thenerdparty.tumblr.com, which is the same site. We're working on changing that up. Facebook is facebook.com/thenerdparty, and you can email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. Pretty much any derivation of The Nerd Party, you can find us. And please rate us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating, we'll mention you on the podcast. We've been really slacking on that. I really do apologize to the people who have given us 5-star reviews and we haven't mentioned you. We promise that we're going to do that, and we're going to do that soon. So thank you so much for those of you who have. We will mention you soon.
And thanks for listening to The Nerd Party. And like so many TV shows before us, we now end our broadcast day.
Coming up next week.
But on June 19th, the truth is coming.
Scully. Run! have a situation.
I need you on this. One man alone cannot fight the future.
Mulder! There's no time!
It has mutated.
Into what? Trust no one, Mr. Mulder. The truth is something you'll never guess, never have predicted.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Pod.
It's time to say goodnight to inefficient night storage heaters. Bulky, unattractive, with no precise control, leaving you boiling in the morning and rather chilly at night. So tune in to Fisher Future Heat, home heating systems that give you a steady, controllable supply of heat 24 hours a day. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.